Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. I don't know about you, but I feel like business, family, social media, it just never stops. And there's far too much going on in a day where I really feel like, wow, I need more hours sometimes. And I remember when I transitioned from agency owner, so I owned a marketing communication firm, and I went over to my own communications consulting business, I thought that the workload would actually lessen. And to my surprise, even though I kept my own hours and chose more of the things I wanted to do, life and work actually got more demanding. And I felt like, you know what? I think it's time. I need some help, and I'm going to take a leap of faith, and I'm going to outsource some of my administrative tasks, which is exactly what I did. And maybe you're feeling that way right now. Maybe you're at the point in your career where you might want to make a move too. And this is the perfect segue into my special guest today. Her name is Jess Ostroff. And she is the founder of Don't Panic Management, and I call them DPM. And Jess is the director of Calm, which clearly, if you know her and if you've worked with her, she's built her business and reputation around helping companies and executives excel at what they do best, because she's able to kind of take that workload and let them outsource services that can be handled virtually. So in all transparency, I just want to mention that Jess's company works with me and my company, Pure Performance. And before Jess, I didn't even know that a virtual assistant or a VA could even be an instrumental part of your team. So Jess is here today. She's on the show. She's going to share her entrepreneurial journey with you and also enlighten you about the world of outsourcing, maybe why and when you should, or even when you shouldn't. Jess, it's so great to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you, Deirdre. I'm so excited to be here. I love Women Worldwide. I love that you are empowering other females out there, and it's so exciting to be here.
Well, thank you. And there's so much to talk about with you. So I set you up as that director of Calm and what you do. Maybe you could just give a little of the background history, your journey to becoming the founder of your own company and director of Calm at Don't Panic Management.
Absolutely. Well, I started in marketing, and I majored in marketing in college, and I was interested in the more creative side of business, but I also wanted to be doing something that would allow me the flexibility to travel and meet new people and go new places. So I was, trying all kinds of different internships, and this was around the time when interactive advertising and PPC and, you know, all these fun SEO and marketing terms started to emerge. And so I was trying them all and, you know, trying to figure out what I liked as much as what I didn't like. And what I realized was very quickly that my background in the business school was a lot to do with developing systems and processes to make things more efficient. And when I got into the workforce after college, I was working at a nonprofit, and I found that things were really inefficient, and I couldn't stand it. And it got to a point where I was working from 8:30 to 5:30 every day, and at this point, I was living in LA, and my office was probably 2 minutes from the beach. And I couldn't stand the fact that I, you know, was finishing my work for the day, but I still had to sit there. You know, I still had to clock in the hours until 5:30, even if I had nothing else to do. And you know, I wasn't not being proactive. I was always asking for more to do. And that made me more frustrated because I was like, okay, I'm trying to help here. And, you know, there's nothing else for me to do except go to the beach. And I couldn't. So I decided that I would try and do something else, at least on the side. I had joined Twitter. This was in 2009, and started following a couple of people that I thought were interesting or people that I had worked with in the past in my other marketing jobs. And I quickly started noticing that more and more people were starting their own businesses and needed help. And because of my interest in marketing, but also my organizational skills, I was able to start taking on some virtual assistant work on a freelance basis, even though, you know, when I first started hearing about it, I didn't know what a virtual assistant was.
I was just going to ask that, if you even knew what
no,
it was.
No, I didn't. And I guess I thought that, well, you know, I've done admin work before. I've been an intern. I've worked every job, you know, and under the sun at that age that you can get, at least, you know. And I felt like I was organized. I felt like I understood technology really well. And so doing work virtually made a lot of sense. And basically, as soon as I was able to get enough freelance work that I could quit my job and still pay my bills, I did. And that took about, I think it was about 5 months after I started. And
that's quick.
It was quick, but I had very low expenses. You know, I was 23 years old. I was single. I lived in an apartment with four other people. So, you know, it happened to be a good time for me to be branching out because I just didn't have a lot of other responsibilities. And, and it kind of just evolved from there. I guess I was freelancing for about a year and a half before I officially incorporated Don't Panic Management in 2011. And I really just wanted to help people, and I wanted to have a flexible, location-independent life. And that's kind of how it all started.
I love that it started from this side hustle. You hear more and more about people who have that 9-to-5 job and realize there's something else, and they go about it's a really smart way. What you did, where you kind of get on your feet, you establish a base, and you move toward a business. And I'm just wondering, you know, you had a vision, clearly. You said you wanted to help people, you were extremely organized, you took on, you know, being a virtual assistant. But do you think is it easy or difficult for other entrepreneurs and small business owners to outsource parts of their business to you? It's a big decision.
Right. I think it's very difficult for some people and very easy for others. It kind of depends on the type of person you are. Some people, they're very self-aware. They know exactly what they're good at and what they're not good at. And they know that they should be getting help. They know that there are things that they just can't do on their own. And I think those people have the easiest time outsourcing, but they're not always the easiest to work with. Sometimes they're not as organized, you know, because they're not good at organization, right? That's why they're outsourcing it. And then there are other people who I would put myself in this category who are good at a lot of things and don't really want to outsource because they're kind of perfectionists and they are afraid of giving up control of what they're doing to somebody else. And so in some ways, I started this business for myself because I knew that there were other people out there like me who just needed a little push. Because the reality is, when you do get there, you know, mentally with yourself, and then you find someone that you really trust and that you can train and get really on your team, there's nothing better. Because you get so much of your time back and you just get so much of your brain space back. And I think that's the biggest benefit of outsourcing anything, even if you're outsourcing, you know, your laundry or you're having someone come over twice a month to clean your house. All of a sudden, you have those hours back in your life that you can be working on bigger, more important projects.
Right, because there's always opportunity costs. And if you think you can do everything, well, you're not getting to other things that could be really beneficial. But I do know, because I'm an entrepreneur and I've had several businesses, it's hard to, you tend to want to control. Early as an entrepreneur, it was very difficult to delegate, but you grow and then you are able to trust people. But for outsourcing specifically, which I know is a big decision because I went through it, mm-hmm. maybe you could describe some of those signs of when somebody is ready. What are those signals? What do they experience as a business owner?
Absolutely. I think a lot of people start their own businesses because, similar to the reason that I started and I think you started, was that we had either a passion for something or a passion for a certain kind of lifestyle. And so it gets to a point when you are starting a business and when your business becomes successful, that all of a sudden you don't even have time to work on that thing that you started your business for, because all of the tasks of actually running that business get in your way.
Right.
And so that's one thing, is if you're finding that, oh man, you know, I used to be able to knit 20 sweaters a day, and now because I'm doing my own accounting and I'm doing my own, you know, scheduling and bookkeeping, I can only knit 10 sweaters a day, you know, or whatever it is. If you're finding that these other things that you didn't start your business to do and you're not uniquely qualified to do are getting in the way, that is a good time to consider getting some help. And on the other side, you know, for me, I wanted a certain lifestyle. I wanted to be able to go to the beach in the middle of the day, you know, when I lived in LA, which I don't live there anymore and I do miss that. But, you know, for me, I was working so many hours that I didn't even have a life outside of my work. And there was no amount of money that would make that worthwhile for me. So I think it has to do with, one, if you can't get that work done that you originally intended to do, or two, if you no longer have the lifestyle that you intended by starting your business. Those are two ways that you'll know that it might be time to start looking into getting some help.
Absolutely. I'll add one more in the mix. You start making mistakes.
Yeah. Yep. That's a good one.
Right. You just make mistakes and then you say, oh my gosh, I can't, there's no way I can continue down this path. So that would be number three, at least what I experienced. So let's talk a little bit more about the virtual assistant, because even sometimes I say, oh, I have a VA, and somebody would say, a what? I say, right, a virtual assistant. And, you know, if you think about it, how does that person fit into your, you know, everything that you do, and what kind of trust and level of flexibility do you need if you want to have a virtual assistant? If you've already determined that you're really busy and you know it's time to do something, is every personality suited for the virtual assistant?
This is a great question. So, one, I think that everyone should have an assistant, virtual or not. So
yes. Okay, that's a good point.
Yeah. So I think that I don't think you have to have a certain kind of personality. I don't think you have to be a certain kind of person to have an assistant. It just might be, like you said, it may not, virtual may not be for everyone. So the cool thing about today is that the virtual assistant industry has now been around for quite some time. You know, when I started, I didn't know what it was. And now, you know, that was 2009, started the business in 2011. It's been, you know, over 5 years since we started. And it's really reaching critical mass where people are starting to understand what a virtual assistant is and what they can and cannot do. But the cool thing is that there are so many different kinds of assistants out there now, and so many different people who want to work virtually and have this lifestyle. So you can really find an assistant for anything that you want. You know, you can have a podcast production assistant. You can have an executive assistant. It's not limited to one thing or the other. So that's what's cool. And that's what I think you really need to think about, is where is the biggest pain point in your business? You know, if you just are like, I hate sending invoices, I hate reconciling my bank accounts, or, you know, I cannot stand sending another email to remind someone of a meeting, you know, figuring out what those things that you either cannot do or you hate doing, and start there and start thinking about, well, what kind of person do I need? You know, if it's, if the thing you hate doing is going to get the mail, you know, from your PO box at the post office, well, maybe a virtual assistant isn't going to work for that. But, you know, if it's things that can be done online, and so much of business operations can be done online now, and so many people are starting virtual businesses or evolving into virtual businesses, so they can have someone who's not directly in their office. But another thing, you know, that's becoming more popular is the idea that your talent pool all of a sudden is enormous when you go virtual. You know, you're not just looking at the people in your town.
That's true.
You're looking at people all over the world. And so if you think about what you really need and what kind of person you want to work with you, it's the sky's the limit. I mean, you can generally find that person. Now, you're asking about the trust level. I think it starts with understanding yourself. Mm-hmm. And understanding what kinds of things you're nervous about, or what kinds of things really bother you. You know, one of the things that we ask in our initial meetings and discovery calls are, what are your pet peeves? And sometimes people don't want to admit that they even have pet peeves. Sure. But being really honest about that.
Everybody has pet peeves.
Of course. Of course.
And they can be honest.
Silly. Yeah. And they might seem like, you know, silly, but they're important. You know, I remember we had a client one time who would always sign off her emails with cheers, you know, and comma, whatever her name was. And then her assistant noticed that and started doing the same thing. But then she said, no, I don't want you to do that. I can do it, but I don't want you to do it.
Because that was a pet peeve.
Yeah, totally.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So just little things like that. And so the more you understand about yourself before you even get to the hiring process or the selection process, the better you're going to be at finding someone who's right for you. I would also think about, you know, if you're really concerned about security, or if there are any things going on with, you know, related to uniquely virtual problems, you know, like file sharing and things like that, I would just make sure that you're asking those questions when you're interviewing people and you're saying, you know, how do you keep your files secure? Or how can I share information with you to make sure that it's not going to get, you know, intercepted by hackers, or whatever the thing is that you're concerned about. Make sure you're asking those questions when you're selecting an assistant. And if they don't have a good answer or an answer that makes you feel comfortable, then move on. And like I said, I think it's an exciting time because there are so many people who are working as virtual assistants and so many agencies now that are providing that service. So the pool is large.
Yeah, it sounds like a really large pool. And I like the way you phrased it, where you have to kind of look at yourself first. And I do believe that what you put into it is what you're going to get out of it. You know, it's a relationship. So when you talk about building trust with any assistant, whether it's a physical person who follows you around or a virtual assistant, you're the other half of that right. relationship, and right. you have to determine how much do you want to give so that person on the receiving line can actually grow with you and you can do great things together, and they can be an even better resource for you. So let's keep it real. There are definitely the pros. We talked about the lifestyle, the passion of being able to do what you want to do, not making mistakes, you know, having that trust. What would be the cons? Are there cons of outsourcing?
Definitely. I mean, you don't, if you've never met your assistant and you're working through an agency or through an individual, there's always a risk that that person is going to just leave, take the money and run, you know, and I have heard many horror stories. I would say more so with people abroad than people in their own countries, but they've sent in some money, they've sent in some assignments, and then it's like, oh, I had a death in the family, and oh, I have to go to do this, or right. It's like one excuse after the other, and then sometimes they just disappear, and it's hard for me to hear those stories, because yeah. they really, not only is it terrible for the client, but it's terrible for the reputation of assistants and virtual assistants. So that's tough. But again, I think it comes down to you and what you're doing in the process to ensure that you're hiring someone that you can trust. And I love that you mentioned the relationship thing, because I was kind of chuckling over here, because we sometimes talk about that it's almost like dating. Like, we have to figure out your matchmaking profile as a client.
Like eHarmony, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It's like eHarmony for virtual assistants.
Right, why not?
Yeah, because you're right. You know, the best ones are the people who actually get along and actually care about each other's businesses and each other's lives. And if you don't develop that relationship and you don't put in the work and the time to really know your assistant and get them to really know you, then yeah, the risk is higher, I would say, because they just don't care. Whereas, you know, we've had people who have had serious emergencies and serious life events happen, but they're open with us, and they tell us, you know, I've got this thing going on, I can't work with you anymore, you know, I love you, but this is the end, kind of thing. And that's what we want. Like, you can never be sure that when you hire a virtual assistant, they're going to be with you forever. You hope for that, because, you know, you put in a lot of work to get them up to speed and understanding your business, but
sure.
But all you can ask for is that they're open and honest with you, and that if something does go wrong, that they'll help you find somebody else, and they'll be there, you know, for the training process or whatever it is. And I would say that another great thing about working with virtual assistants is that they can help you create processes for things. So if you, you know, hire someone and you train them, you show them how to do everything, you can actually ask them to create a process from everything that they just learned, which is not only good for them to keep their tasks on track and to be double checking things the way you want them, but also, you know, in the event that something happens and they need to move on, or you want to let them go, then you have those processes in place for the next person.
That's a great, I mean, you've made so many great points, but that is an excellent point right there. You're building a model, in a sense, that can be used moving forward, even though you hope that you stay with the same person. But it's important that that's in place, because you're right, you never know what can happen. Jess, I'm just going to ask you to hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a super quick break to give some love to our sponsor. And when we get back, Jess is going to share her biggest wake-up moment and when she learned that very important word, how to say no.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with two M's.com.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Jess Ostroff, Director of Comm at Don't Panic Management, was just sharing her thoughts on when to outsource and the pros and cons of letting someone else handle your business. So Jess, let's just jump back into our conversation. You gave some really great advice about when to outsource, knowing when you're ready. I'd love to hear, as you were building your business, maybe some of the challenges that you experienced along the way.
Definitely. So this is a service-based business, and the services that we provide are provided by humans. And as you can imagine, working with people, everyone's unique. And so that has been an ongoing challenge of finding the right people to work with, the right people for me and for my business. And that's both on the client side and the assistant side. And it's been something that we've spent a long time taking a good hard look at to understand our own pet peeves. It's almost like we're taking ourselves as a client and trying to figure out who we really are, what our communications preferences are, what things that are non-negotiable, and how much of perfectionists are we, you know, and what are our core values? And that's something that we've tried to really live into, especially over the past year. You know, we went through a rebranding last summer. We've had people come and go. We've had some crazy times with, you know, bringing on a bunch of new people at once and then having to let people go. And, you know, just a lot of whirlwind experiences. But the biggest thing that I've learned from all of those challenges is that when I listen to what I think is right, and if I'm not sure what's right, I look back to our core values and I look back to who we really are in our hearts. And that always helps me make the right decision. And anytime I didn't do that, that's kind of when I've gotten in trouble. And a lot of business people that I've talked to have said similar things. You know, they think it's like, okay, you know, this is an exciting opportunity. It's too good to pass up, but I feel a little weird about it, but I'm going to do it anyway, you know, and then it crashes and burns. And it's, you can never really know. And sometimes taking a risk is great and it can work out really well for your business. But, you know, if there's one thing I've learned from this past year, especially, it's that listening to my gut, learning when to say yes, and more importantly, when to say no, and just trying to do the things that feel right and that fit in and align with who we really are. And that's how we have been able to get the best people and keep the best people.
I think you mentioned some really interesting points. You sort of are listening, going back to the core or the foundation, which allows you to question, you know, is this the way to go? But that whole gut instinct is so important. And I'm feeling the more that I speak with women in business, whether they're the CEO of a major corporation or an entrepreneur like yourself, there is something to be said about that gut. And I would say, even for myself, 9 times out of 10, that gut feeling is the right direction. Mm-hmm. And just like you said about how, ooh, I have a funny feeling about this, but I'm going to do it anyway, crash, burn.
Yep. Every time.
I know. So then
and what, like we still right? do it.
Exactly. That's what I'm wondering. I hope that anyone who is listening really starts tuning in to that inner gut. And even if the inner gut just makes you slow down, right? Just slow down for a second and try to feel your way from there because something is telling you something. So yep. I know that you did mention a rebrand that you went through, and that's a super big deal. Is that a part of your kind of wake-up moment that you had once mentioned to me, like that big aha moment for yourself?
Yeah.
Or what was that?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, the business, like I said, officially started in 2011 and was kind of chugging along, doing good, growing. You know, we've been doubling year over year our revenue, and that was great. But I would say maybe about a year and a half ago, I started to feel like the wheels were turning, but we weren't going anywhere. And I hate that feeling because I am, you know, very ambitious. You are too.
You
know, it's like if we're not moving forward, something's wrong. And I was just starting to feel like that I was working really hard, but nothing particularly exciting was happening. And I felt like something had to change. You know, the pain of staying in one place was outweighing the pain of doing something different. So I did a few things, hired a couple of people, changed when I was going to be available and what I was going to be working on. There were kind of a lot of things moving at once, and I was just sort of testing different things and seeing, you know, if I put this responsibility on this person, what would happen? Or if I, you know, got some help with this thing, what would happen? And sort of trying those different things and picking the ones that worked best. And I think that the biggest moment, though, was when we all got together last year, our leadership team. We got together in person, which I think is really important, especially if you have a virtual team. And we realized that we had some bad eggs. You know, we had some clients that we didn't really like working with. We had some assistants that weren't always hitting the mark. And we said, well, why is this? You know, what is going on that we're not really there? And we wondered if part of it was our name and our website and how we were putting ourselves out there to the universe. And that's when we decided, you know, we went through a whole naming exercise. We did not find anything better than Don't Panic Management. And I'm
I love the name.
Happy for that. Yeah. I always loved it. But we had to go through the exercise. And then, yeah, we completely redid our website. We also realized that as many clients were, or potential clients were coming to us for help, we were getting a lot of inquiries from assistants or potential assistants who wanted to work for us because they heard about us. They heard it was a great place to work. You know, we're super fun. We actually make a difference in people's lives. And so that was kind of a turning point too, that not only do clients want to hire us, but other people want to be virtual assistants and
That's
do
cool.
it at Don't Panic. Yeah. So that was another thing we really had to shift on the website. We basically now have two sides to the site, you know, hire a VA or become a VA. And so yeah, so that was a big change. And then, and you know, for me, I think I don't always take my own medicine of asking for help when I need it. It's right. Like, I preach this to all of our clients, and yet I don't always do it myself. but my team has been really helpful in helping me recognize the things that I do need help with and the things that I need to get out of my own way for. And to truly become a real CEO as opposed to somebody who's, you know, still working 30 hours a week on clients and not working on trying to grow our brand.
Right, vision, or trying direction. To get us
exactly. So
the business.
Right. So it's still a work in progress to
Always.
This day, you know. I'm still very hands-on with the business, which I think is important. I think I need to have a strong pulse on our clients and what their needs are so that I can accurately market the business to new clients and to new assistants, but definitely taking more of a strategic role this year and getting out there doing speaking, you know, talking to people like you on podcasts and just trying to get the word out that it's okay to ask for help. I'm a living and breathing example, you know.
Right. Exactly. You're the perfect example. So, yeah. You know, moving into that strategic role, and I think this is helpful for other professionals, it does come down to a single word. Mm-hmm. No. So how easy or hard is it to use that word in your business so that you can do the things that you're supposed to do?
Oh my gosh, it's so hard. I mean, I think just the idea that I started this whole business because I wanted to help people and then to have to say no to someone who's asking for help.
It's ironic.
It's the worst. And I have a really hard time with it. I have an easier time when it's like other things, like opportunities. You know, if I get asked to do something, to speak for free, for example, at events, like, you know what, actually my time is more valuably spent other places. I can't do that right now. But saying no to potential clients is the hardest thing. But it's necessary because we're not trying to be the biggest virtual assistant agency in the world. You know, if we were, then we'd just take everybody. But we're trying to really help people. And when I thought about it more deeply, I realized, you know what, if it's not the right fit, even if I want to help them, I'm not going to be able to help them. I'm not going to be successful. And that made it a little bit easier for me to say no, is asking myself, can we be successful here? And if the answer was no, or if the answer was yes, but we're going to have to work 80 hours a week just to keep this person happy, you know, sort of like weighing the opportunity cost there and looking at the numbers. I mean, that's something that we did last year too, was looking at every single client and every single service that we offered and figuring out how profitable is each one of these things. How big is the hassle factor? You know, if something is a high revenue generator, but also a high hassle factor, do we really want to do that? No, we want the ones that are high revenue, low hassle. And so we've sort of reevaluated our services. We've reevaluated what kind of clients we want to bring on. And so we're able to sort of use the data to make decisions. And that makes it easier than just having to go with your emotions. I mean,
yeah, I was going to ask that question. Yeah. Are you the numbers and profitability focused? Or are you the emotions and the relationship focused? But something tells me, being in the business that you are, you have to have the steady relationship and the growth in that area. But at the same time, it's numbers and profitability too. And a lot of that determines the no.
Exactly. I would say that I started off more numbers focused because it was just me and I had to make ends meet. And it's funny because I've been thinking about this a lot. I think sort of in some of the middle years, I went more emotion and intuition based and stopped looking at the numbers. And that's how we got into some trouble, you know, having...
You have to have both.
Right. You have to have both. So now I'm coming back onto the number side and really understanding where we stand, you know, in every facet of the business. And that's helping me, you know, of course, it still comes down to we want to have good lives. We want to be happy. So there is some emotion there. But using the numbers to make better decisions has been really important, especially since the rebrand.
Well, I would agree with you there. The numbers are definitely important, balanced, of course, by the EQ, emotional quotient that you possess. What about the people around you? So are you more looking for, when it comes to the characteristics of your team, people who are just like you, or they are different because they add something that you don't have?
I always look for different people, and I always try to surround myself with people that are smarter than me, at least in some ways. Yeah. Because that's the only way you learn, right? It's the only way you grow. And the more I am reading about and learning about leadership and management and actually running a real business, is that's the best way to do it. You need to all have different skills and different perspectives, and you need to listen to your team. I've put myself on an island alone many times over the years because I felt like, you know, this really isn't my team's problem. I started this business. I'm the entrepreneur. It's my problem. But now I have a team that I not only really trust, but whose opinions I really value. And so I'm sharing more about, you know, what keeps me up at night in the business and the things that I don't have an answer to. And I used to think that sharing some of those things made me a weaker leader, but the value that I've gotten from their opinions and from their confidence in moving forward on things has just been so important to the growth of the business. And it's taught me that it's okay to share and it's okay to not have all the answers. And if you have the right people around you, you'll be fine because you'll be able to work through it and find a solution together.
Yeah, that's really good. And also the folks around you, are you open to their critique and the gift of feedback? Do you welcome that from your team?
I do. Perhaps reluctantly sometimes. You know, it's never easy. I mean, it's never easy for anyone to get, you know, negative feedback. And I think that one of the things that happened this past year is we had to let somebody go. And that was really hard because, you know, it wasn't the right fit. But one of the things with that person was I was always getting feedback to the point where it wasn't constructive.
Right.
And that was one of the things, you know, I think there's a line between giving your boss or your manager ideas and here's how you can help me, you know, here's how you can help me be a better employee or here's how I can better get my work done versus a critique of, you're not a good leader, or you're not doing your job for this or that reason. You know, I think there's just a different way to give and receive feedback that's constructive.
Absolutely. Oh, I agree. I mean, that does not sound like constructive feedback at all. There's certainly a way to frame things. And plus it is really, well, how can help me to help you? You know, That's all you want to do.
Exactly. And that's, I think, the best manager relationships and just team, you know, leadership relationships are those that, you know, I can look at someone from my team and try to tell when they need help and maybe they're not asking for it. And same thing on the other side, or maybe I can tell that they need a new challenge, or that they want to try something different, or that they're not fulfilled, or that something's going on in their personal life and they just need a break. You know, listening to your team and paying attention to sometimes the things that they're not saying is just as important as giving feedback and receiving feedback, I think.
Yeah. Oh, you nailed it. There's things that people will share with you openly that'll give you a glimpse into how they're feeling. But there's a lot of silent talk, and leaders and managers can pick up on this, whether it's through actions that are happening within the workday or the night work that they do, their body language. There's all sorts of ways to read that.
Yeah, and I will say that's really hard with a virtual relationship. It's one thing that I get a little sad about sometimes, that I don't get to see my team every day and really observe all of that, their body language and things. But, you know, we've just tried to build in some other ways of, you know, having weekly or daily meetings and just having little checkpoints here and there. And I think that's something that if anyone is running a virtual business, you know, the work product is just as important as the cultural fit and the happiness factor. So having those checkpoints and making sure that everybody is doing okay, it's going to be a lot better, a lot more successful.
Sure. The happiness checkpoint and having that type of culture will lead to the better output. And that's how you'll really know if everybody is in fact happy and being honest. Interesting. So what about a little bit of advice? What would you say to other entrepreneurs or professionals about business growth and pursuing their passion?
One of the things that happened to me is, as I was starting, was I thought that all these other entrepreneurs and business owners around me knew all the answers. And I remember back in 2011, I was trying to get out there and talk to as many people as possible, you know, joining Twitter chats and going to conferences and just doing everything I can to get out there. And I remember asking specifically Joe Polizzi, and I think he probably doesn't remember this, but I was at the Content Marketing World Conference, and I was like, Joe, this is amazing. How did you do this? You know, how did you build the Content Marketing Institute and then make this incredible event and look at all these people and everyone loves you? And he was like, Jess, I don't know. I just did it.
I love his honesty. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great. And it was so great for me to hear that at, you know, 25 or however old I was, and just to hear that this guy who I thought had it all together didn't. And that was okay. And that's something that it stresses me out so much, not having the answer.
Right. Learn as you go.
But I've had to just be okay with it. I've had to embrace the fact that, you know, I am successful and the decisions I make will work if I stick to my gut and if I go with my values every time. And so I think that for me, that was so valuable. And I hope that other entrepreneurs, especially women, I mean, I think women's confidence can tend to be lower than men sometimes, just for whatever reason. And I just want women to stay confident and believe that what you're doing is right, and be slower than you think you need to be. I think when you're growing a business, sometimes it's easy to just grab onto shiny new things and take whatever opportunities there are and try everything, and that's fine. But when you can slow down a little bit and be more intentional about your decision-making process and say, is this right for me? You'll end up making better decisions for the long run.
I agree. And what you said about go with your values and stick with your gut, really, really good advice. Okay, last question, super easy.
Okay.
Where can people find out more about you and Don't Panic Management?
Okay, well, you can visit don'tpanicmgmt.com. That's short for management. There's some sort of like theater company or something like that that owns don'tpanicmanagement.com. So
don't go there.
we haven't been able to get that from them yet, but one day we will. So at don'tpanicmgmt everywhere on the internet. I am at Jess Ostroff on pretty much every social network. Cool. You can also email me jess@don'tpanicmgmt.com if you have any questions or if you want to talk about whether a virtual assistant is right for you or anything at all. I love to connect, especially to other women, and I so appreciate you having me.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you. Thanks for sharing your journey, all of your insights and advice, and how you've just paved such an easy way for companies and executives to take advantage of outsourcing. I think we learned a lot from you today, Jess. So thank you.
Thank you.
And I'd also like to thank all of you for tuning in to Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.